Good morning. This is Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm Jeanette Didios. Acequias were created and maintained by Native Americans before the Spanish settlers arrived. These man-made channels were so successful at moving the water that sustained people that they were expanded upon by Europeans to reach more of the arid lands we now call home. Centuries later, acequias remain a common conveyance for water all around our state in the face of an unpredictable climate and constant water rights battles. In a new documentary film, Acequias, The Legacy Lives On, director Araceli Chapa brings attention to the canals through the eyes of farmers, advocates, scholars, lawmakers, journalists, and members of the community, highlighting the past, present, and future of acequias and how important they are to farming and local and regional economies. It will screen April 4th, 5th, and 6th at the Guild Cinema in Albuquerque. Today on Let's Talk New Mexico, we'll highlight the film, and we want to hear from you. Should we be doing more to protect acequias? Do you live near an acequia or count on one for water? Would your community be able to still sustain your way of life if they were to go dry? Let us know by joining our conversation this morning by calling 505-277-5866. That's 505-277-KUNM. You can also send us questions or comments to letstalk@kunm.org or tweet us with the hashtag #LetsTalkNM. So let's go ahead and start the show with our first guest of the morning, Araceli Chapa, producer and director of Acequias, The Legacy Lives On, and a former host on the program. Welcome back, Araceli.
Thank you. Thank you very much. It's so nice to be here. I almost sat in your chair, like out of habit, but it's so great to be here.
It happens all the time. So before we get started, can you describe for our listeners exactly what an acequia is? I mean, I don't want to call myself out, but up until recently, I only ever heard of them being called water drainages.
Or water irrigation ditches. it's really an infrastructure of over 700 irrigation ditches. They're not normally called that. They're called acequias because there is an acequia culture that exists in New Mexico, which is what I discovered producing the film. So there are, as Paula Garcia mentions in the film, there are over 700 acequias in New Mexico. And they, as you mentioned in your introduction, they were started prior to Spanish contact, and then they were expanded after Oñate came and, you know, had everybody digging the ditches. And I think your other host, Adrian, could probably give us a better example of what, you know, an acequia really is. But it is, they're irrigation ditches, and they're different from the ones in northern New Mexico to the ones that are within the Middle Rio Grande Conservancy District. They're very different. And, you know, once you talk to Adrian, he could kind of probably give you the difference between those two.
Sure. Mm-hmm. I mean, let's bring in our next guest. We have Adrian Oxlesby, is the director of Utah Transparency Resource Center here at University of New Mexico. Good morning.
Hey, good morning.
So let's go ahead and jump into it. What exactly are acequias?
Sure. Well, acequias are water conveyances. They're generally surface water diversions from river systems. I'd say the majority of the acequias in the state tend to be in higher watersheds. But as Arcee mentioned, we have acequias, you know, north and south, and including here in the Middle Rio Grande Valley. Our acequias here in the Middle Rio Grande Valley have been incorporated into the Middle Rio Grande Conservancy District. So running from Cochiti down to Bosque del Apache, depending on who does the counting, historically we think there were somewhere between 68 and 72 separate acequia systems within this valley. And that, of course, includes the six pueblos that are within the valley as well. And these are the water conveyances that got the water out to the fields, that helped folks grow the food, that sustained life, and turned the valley green.
And also, I would also want to ask, where do we get our water unnecessarily, and what makes it so valuable to our state?
Yeah, well, you know, for acequias, the vast majority of them rely on surface water. So it's snow, melt, and rain. And that's why, you know, we're really concerned about the future of acequias in the face of climate change and diminishing surface water supplies with increasing temperatures here in New Mexico. Again, you know, most of them have diversions directly off of tributaries or larger river systems. Some just have little push-up dams. You know, where they push the dirt up to shunt the water off into their ditches. Some have brush and rock diversions. Some have, you know, much more sophisticated, telemetry controlled, radio controlled gates and concrete structures. And many of them we see have been put into pipes in some parts of the state. And some folks see that as a benefit, as increasing efficiency. But other folks are really resistant to that because the acequias, beyond just supporting agriculture, really extend the river out into the broader landscape. So they provide a lot of habitat. They, you know, allow for all the cottonwood trees that we have that are further away from the river than in the traditional floodplain.
And for our listeners who aren't too familiar with acequias, what are some of the main challenges acequias are facing right now?
Yeah, well, again, you know, water scarcity is primary. So we've seen, you know, we've had some tremendous years of drought that we've been suffering through. And of course, we're really not calling it drought anymore. We're calling it aridification and sort of reorienting ourselves towards a future with less surface water. That really is a primary challenge. You know, if the water is not there, you can't grow your food. And, you know, the trees along those ditches start to suffer as well. And there's also the cultural and spiritual value that water brings to our communities. And so losing that is another deep concern, I think, because the acequias really bring us together. And not having acequias in the communities where we've seen acequias dry up and sort of become non-functional, you lose that connection because the acequia, you know, acts like a tie that binds us all of us who use them. You know, we're all connected and have to cooperate. And historically, acequias have served as the foundation for community governance as well in historic, you know, New Mexico communities.
Exactly, of course. And then, RC, I wanted to jump back right to you. I wanted to first and foremost congratulate you on your newest film. As a fellow filmmaker, I know how daunting it could be to make a film. So can you tell me a little bit more about it?
Sure. Yeah, as you say, it is a very daunting passion, I would say. It took about 5 years to produce, I think. Well, I actually got the funding from the state legislature back in 2013 and wasn't able to really get to it because of other commitments. Other film projects were coming in, mainly three films that I produced regarding UNM's history. The 125th anniversary of the UNM, 50th anniversary of Pope Joy, and 75th anniversary of Zimmerman Library. And I'm proud to say all of those were Emmy nominated.
Congratulations.
Thank you. So I had to put this project aside. And then about 5 years ago, I started in earnest to start interviewing people, start doing the research. Adrian, of course, was one of the people that I interviewed. And that was, I don't know, four years ago. And then, of course, COVID stopped it. But I think that this project was one of those that I really had been wanting to do since I moved to New Mexico in 97, when I first discovered the acequias. Yes, I had been up in Mora doing a story on something else, and I saw them while I was shooting there, and I'm like, what is this? And they were just so beautiful. They were like storybook waterways. The setting was just so beautiful. I thought, one of these days, I'm going to do a film on these acequias. And I've just discovered so many wonderful people too, two others that you're also going to have on the program. Their generosity with their time, Don Bustos, wonderful farmer, and of course, Paula Garcia, executive director of the New Mexico Acequia Association. And so it was, you know, producing the film was fun because it, you had to keep in mind the seasons. I wanted to make sure that I got the fall, spring, summer, winter, and all of that is shown with beautiful footage in the film. I think that one of the things people will get out of it is that it's really the visuals are stunning. And I've had I did have my the premiere at the National Hispanic Cultural Center to a sold-out crowd. More than 700 people showed up, and they had to turn people away. I had one at the Taos Center for the Arts. Again, the same thing. But those people weren't turned away. They said, we're willing to stand along the sides of the theater. And then also at Jean Couteau in Santa Fe, which was, it was really interesting because one of the second days of the screening in Santa Fe,
It was mostly individuals from FEMA, and they were there to be as part of their training because of their recovery in the Mora County. And I was just really amazed at afterwards the kinds of questions they had. They seemed to be moved by the film, and I'm hoping that, you know, it makes a difference. So.
And that's amazing to hear. I'm so glad that you've been getting such, you know, amazing reactions so far. And that's sort of what I want to ask you. Like, have anyone come to you after these films saying, you know, what they thought?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Mostly people are so moved. They're in tears. I'm just been so overwhelmed by the response and people saying this movie, this film is just really, you know, changed my molecules and thinking, wow, we have so much to be grateful for here in New Mexico. And it's become a film that people say, you know, to me, not it's great, but that we need to see it. People need to see it. I've right now in the pipeline, I've got the Taos Ski Valley wants to show it with, you know, they want to show it up there because there's controversies going up over there with water rights. Let's see, who else? I've got it here. Let's see, the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation would like to see it. Embudo, Peñasco, Las Vegas, Las Cruces, the Santa Fe Contemporary Center for Contemporary Arts. These are all people that I'm communicating with right now to show the film, and it's kind of never ending. And I never expected. I mean, I knew there would be a positive response, but not a "we need to see this film" kind of response, you know. So it's just been wonderful. I've just been so moved by people who come to me after the films in tears. They're like, or like they see a picture of, you know, from the 1930s. That's my grandma. So, you know, it's been a really wonderful response.
That's amazing to hear. Mm-hmm. And it seems like we have an email from Chris from Albuquerque. Mm-hmm. He wanted to say, Acequias provide more than just water. They provide community. They provide shade. Mm-hmm. They provide places for people to walk and recreate together. Bernalillo County has 300 miles of urban acequias and ditches running through the North and South Valley and parts of downtown. When people leave their homes and go for a walk along the ditch, they can see the vibrancy of local agriculture and domestic for me. In both the North and South Valleys, you might come up on llamas, peacocks, sheep, cows, etc., and horses along the ditch. Also, during the season, you may observe people farming vegetables, herbs, and alfalfa. This reminds me of how connected we are to this earth. This reminds us that you know, produce doesn't come from a shelf. It comes from the ground. Mm-hmm. I mean, what would you say to that, right, Sally?
Well, I think that that's one of the things that I discovered while putting the film together is that, you know, the acequias, let me backtrack a little bit. I had started writing the film, you know, in a very didactic form, like this is what an acequia is. I had several people, you know, Adrian included, just saying this is what it is, this is what it isn't, the hydrology of it. And then I kind of like hit a wall. I could not go beyond. I wanted to include the historical context. I wanted to include all these other elements, but I couldn't because of the way I started it. And then so I quit writing, and then I went back into my archival research looking for the pictures. And in my research, I discovered all these pictures that were taken by the Farmers Administration in the late 1930s, which were these beautiful films of life in New Mexico with this woman, you know, making tortillas and dinner rolls and with her children in the kitchen, you know, wood-burning stove and kids, a little kid in overalls on a wooden plank across a acequia, putting his hand in the water. And I thought, oh my God, this is the story. And I had asked all the people I interviewed to talk about fond memories of childhood, and they all talked about how, you know, we didn't feel the depression because there was always water that was running through the acequias, and because of the water running through the acequias, this beautiful cultural and traditions emerged. I mean, that's why we have. It's like one person in the film said, the landscape isn't culturally green.
And Arceli, we're gonna have to stop you right there, really quick. We're gonna have to go to a quick break.
Sure.
This is Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM. I'm Jeanette Didios. Do you live near an acequia or count on one for water? Let us know and call us and give us a call at 505-277-5866. We'll be right back.
Support for KUNM provided by Rothstein Donatelli, providing Santa Fe and Albuquerque with law offices for criminal defense, Indian law, and civil rights. More information at rothsteinlaw.com.
KUNM programming is made possible by supporting members from Cuba, Española, and many other communities, large and small. No matter where you call home, thank you for your generosity. KUNM, powered by you.
Composer Kayhan Kalhour was only 17 years old when he left his home in Iran for his own safety. He walked 2,500 miles with a small backpack and his beloved Persian fiddle. His story and music he wrote for the Silk Road Ensemble on the next Performance Today from APM.
Weekday mornings at 9 on KUNM.
Welcome back to Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm Jeanette Didios. We've been talking about acequias and the role they play in the state's agriculture and water supply. I'm here with Arceli and Adrian. And Arceli's film, Acequias, The Legacy Lives On, will screen April 4th, 5th, and 6th at the Guild Cinema in Albuquerque. So right now we have a call from Sarah from Albuquerque. Good morning, Sarah.
Good morning.
Hi, what would you like to say?
I'm here at the Sanchez Farm in the South Valley, and we have 180 students showing up this morning from elementary and middle schools to learn about the acequia here, the Armijo acequia. It's part of the Dolores Huerta Day of Service. The kids will be planting trees and sunflowers, and they'll also be working with some acequieros, the people who actually use the acequia. So I think it's really beautiful that you're talking about this, and we'll be educating children this morning. And my second comment is I wanted to mention so the acequia is more than a canal. It is a water democracy, and we're one of the last places in the world that still has that. There's a whole system of governance where water isn't private, it's shared, people are elected. It's a really beautiful system.
Well, thank you, Sarah, for all those comments. I really appreciate that. And Adrian, what would you like to say to Sarah in regard to how acequias is one of the last democracies?
Yeah, Sarah's spot on. acequia governance traditionally is done by three commissioners who are elected by the users, the parciantes on the ditch. And then the three commissioners appoint a mayordomo, an individual who actually does the day-to-day operations, solves the disputes. When folks are arguing over whose turn it is to use the water. And if you consider how long acequias have been part of our culture and traditional governance here in New Mexico, for example, this morning I went for a walk along the Duranis acequia in the North Valley. And it's a great time of year. Today was the first day we had water in it. So water is starting to pour down through the valley, through our canals. But that acequia was dug somewhere around 1706. Obviously the commissioners, the mayordomo who cared for that acequia in those early days were the community leaders. They were the ones who folks would go to solve all sorts of disputes. They were sort of the original form of local governance in New Mexico. And that carries on today.
That's really amazing to hear. Go ahead and move forward and introduce our next guest, Paula Garcia. She's the executive director of the New Mexico Acequia Association. Good morning, Paula.
Good morning, buenos dias.
So Paula, let's go ahead and first start with this question. Our state has seen two of the largest fires in state history last year, with the Hermit's Peak Calf Canyon fire in the north and the Black Fire in the south. What type of damage has that done to acequias?
Well, the two fires have been devastating for acequias. They've been a major catastrophe. The two fires combined burned the most acreage in New Mexico history. And as was mentioned earlier, most of New Mexico's acequias are in the upper watersheds. The Middle Valley and other parts of the state, they've been incorporated into conservancy or irrigation districts. But in the higher elevations, they're closer to the areas where catastrophic wildfire can damage them. So what we're seeing now is that they've been not only affected by the fire in terms of the mountain being burned, but afterwards, we had post-fire flooding, which was even more devastating. So we're working with about 100 acequias, which is a good chunk of acequias across the state that are dealing with post-fire flooding. And this is something that's really threatening the future existence of acequias. But at the same time, we're seeing a very strong resolve to get them reopened. People are very determined to reopen the acequias and get them flowing again. And on that note, I wanted to touch on something about the way that we talk about acequias in our traditional culture, because an acequia is a lot more than an irrigation system. An acequia is a community. And when we talk about acequias, we talk about belonging to an acequia. In Spanish, one would say, yo pertenezco a la acequia. It's belonging to a community. And when we say that we're part of an acequia, we're not saying we're part of an irrigation ditch. We're saying we're part of a community. And so it is the irrigation system, but it's also the community of people who keep the acequia flowing, who every spring bring out a work crew and bring their shovels and remove the silt so that the acequia can flow again. And this has been happening for hundreds of years and generation upon generation. So there's a very deep cultural meaning when we talk about sharing water, what's called the repartimiento. There's a very deep cultural attachment to place and love of place that we call querencia, and of community. And sharing water is difficult. It's complicated. And despite that, we've been doing that. It works. It's been working for hundreds of years. And I would say the aridification and climate change, you know, with the wildfires and water scarcity are very big threats to acequias. The one threat hasn't been discussed yet, and that is the commodification of water. And the way that New Mexico is managing its water right now is to treat water as private property that can be bought and sold by the highest bidder. And the acequia communities in New Mexico have been at the front lines of protecting water as a community resource, of defending water, not just our water rights in the acequias, but also defending the water itself, the rivers, the aquifers, all the water that's connected to sustain life is part of what the commons that acequias are trying to protect and defend for food production now, for our habitat, for wildlife, for our streams and rivers, and also for future generations. And so what we're dealing with is broad, it's epic, it's about water itself and about life itself. And now, of course, with the wildfires, we have an added catastrophe on top of what's already happening, but I'm also seeing a really deep commitment to recovery and to adaptation and resilience in future years. But it's very tough, yeah.
Well, that's interesting to hear. I mean, the federal government now is taking responsibility for the Calf Canyon Hermit's Peak fire, but when it comes to the Black Fire, it's still under investigation. So what does that mean in regard to receiving federal or state relief aid for acequia communities?
So we've been working with acequias in both places. There are about 80 to 90 in the Hermit's Peak Calf Canyon that have been affected, and in the Black Fire, we're looking at 30 to 40 acequias that have been affected. And the Black Fire, we believe that they should have gotten a federal declaration so that they could have had access to FEMA funds. But when the state disaster agency and FEMA got together and did the cost estimates on damage, it did not meet a threshold for a federal declaration. So I think it would be important to revisit that and see if they would qualify. But I think there might have been a past the deadline. So, you know, these things are really guided by high level policies and federal laws. So it's not so much federal responsibility. You know, there's the federal responsibility is pretty clear in Hermit's Peak, Calf Canyon, and Black Fire. The reason they didn't get that federal designation for FEMA was the cost estimate. That was my understanding. So when there's not a federal disaster, the state Disaster Agency, Department of Homeland Emergency Management, is the one that takes the lead on our recovery efforts. And that's underway. Just last week, DHSEM and New Mexico DOT were out in the ground, and they deployed local contractors and dug out numerous acequias in that part of the state. So there's recovery happening. There wasn't a it would have been nice to have the FEMA resource, but the state was able to move quickly and not quickly, but move in to assist when the community asked for help. And it's different from Hermit's Peak, Calf Canyon, where we're relying on FEMA, and things are actually going a lot more slowly because the federal process is more complicated.
Well, that's interesting to hear. I believe in September of 2002, Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham signed an executive order that allocated $750,000 to repair and prevent flooding damage in Grant County. To date, they still haven't received any of those dollars. Why is it taking so long to receive funds?
Well, the governor can do executive orders, and there was more than one. I don't understand all the mechanisms how money gets out on the ground, but from what I can tell, in terms of acequias, there are resources being deployed. I mean, they already have in the past month. I think that what you're referring to may have gone to the county, and you'd probably have to ask the state or the county. What if there's any delays, why that funding hasn't been deployed.
Mm-hmm. And we've also seen with the governor's executive order that only covers 75% of the work done via reimbursement. The rest of the bill is up to local officials to pay. And just last month, Grant County commissioners in southern New Mexico said they'll hand over $600,000 to help repair broken acequia systems. Do you feel this will expedite state funds?
Well, I think that's the way the disaster program is structured, is a 75-25. And my understanding was that a lot of those issues had already been resolved.
Okay, so let's go ahead and move on to Adrian. We've been talking a lot about funding efforts, but water rights is also an issue for acequias. What are some of the main issues?
Yeah, that's right. So here in New Mexico, we have not fully determined who owns what when it comes to water. Some parts of our states, we have active adjudications. These are ongoing court cases where we're trying to determine who owns what. Other parts of the state, we have settlements, primarily with Native American tribes, where we've come to agreements about how much water they are entitled to, what they own. But there's considerable uncertainty, and that creates management difficulties and leaves questions open. What is sort of a benefit to this is that it turns the management back to sort of the local community in a way, is that you don't have a judge or the state engineer telling you, you know, your neighbor has a better water right than you do and we're going to shut you down. So within the acequia communities, there is this long-held tradition that Paula referred to, the repartimiento, which is essentially shortage sharing. So in times of shortages, we work it out along the acequias, as opposed to saying there's a winner and a loser. The priority doctrine, the first-in-time, first-in-right theory of water management, which is enshrined in our state constitution, is embedded in our 1907 water code, tells us that, you know, the senior water users are legally entitled to have the junior water users shut off in times of shortage. But because of this uncertainty, because we have not fully adjudicated our water rights, that makes us a little bit more inclined to follow the repartimiento traditions. And I should say that when we passed the 1907 Water Code, back when we were just a territory, they actually included a chapter about acequias and recognized that acequias are self-governing and recognized that they have their own authority over the water within their systems, and they're entitled to do shortage sharing. So even though the Constitution Constitution tells us it's first in time, first in right. On the ground, our historic and cultural practices really is to just be good neighbors.
And that's exactly what I was going to ask, too. I'm glad you mentioned the 1907 Water Code. You know, it states that a senior rights owner can lower or even shut off water to any junior rights owner until they get the rest of the water owed to them. And is this still a legal and active practice today?
Well, that is the law, yeah. And in other states that have done the hard work of figuring out who owns what, and Colorado is normally sort of held up as the prime example of this, folks figure out at the beginning of the irrigation season, you know, based on forecasts, whether or not they think they're going to get water, based on their priority within the system. So the newer users oftentimes, you know, are trying to forecast, should I even plant this year? We don't see that so much in New Mexico. Again, we tend to share. And so a big example of this is here in the Middle Rio Grande Conservancy District, which, again, is a conglomeration of you know, about 70 historic acequias. The board of directors is allowed to administer the water as they see fit. And the practice here is that we serve everyone equally, except for a small portion of senior Pueblo lands that have been recognized under law as being what we call prior and paramount to all the other users in this valley. But everybody else, when there's, you know, sufficient water, everybody else gets served equally within the system. And of course, folks would argue with me about that, because depending on where you are in the system, just the physical realities means that some people will get water a little more frequently than others, just because of the logistics of delivering water through this enormous system.
And we've talked about being a good neighbor and sharing water. Have you seen any recent conflict with, you know, right water owners fighting with each other?
You do, yeah. I don't want to feed into the narrative that water is for fighting over, because what we really see is that water is what brings us together. As we've talked about, this, the theme this morning is, you know, that acequias are communities. You know, acequias are what makes us friends with our neighbors, sometimes out of necessity. But yeah, there are conflicts out there, for sure. A few years ago, we had a gentleman who pulled a gun on one of the ditch riders in the Conservancy District. Now, he had been drinking a little bit, and there were some other factors at play, but he thought it was his turn to get the water, and it wasn't, and he reacted poorly, as folks sometimes do. But yeah, overall, I would want to stress that water brings us together.
Exactly. And we talk about community when it comes to acequias. And we actually have a Twitter comment from Katie, who says the Spanish word acequia originates from the Arabic word. We've talked about the Spanish native roots of acequias, but do they also come from Africa or the Middle East? Arcee, could you?
Yes, they do. And there's a wonderful book that talks a lot about that, written by Esteban Arellano, called Enduring Acequias, and he gets all into the history going all the way back to the Arabic origins of the word acequia. And I think they brought the acequia to Spain, and then the Spanish brought it here and expanded it. So yes, that is true.
And let's go back to Paula. Paula, I have another legislation question for you. You know, Congress recently passed a $2.5 billion program to fully compensate victims of the Calf Canyon Hermit's Peak fire, but only a small portion of that will go directly to acequias, right?
Yeah, it's correct. There was some federal legislation to create a Hermit's Peak Calf Canyon Act. Office, Hermit's Peak Calf Canyon Claims Office, and it's $2.5 billion, and then there was an additional about $1.5 billion or so, $1 billion in the continuing resolution. So that's positive that the federal government took responsibility and ensured that there'd be some type of compensation for the losses, which are tremendous. And we don't know how much of that's going to go toward acequias right now, because we're still in the process. And there's a FEMA public assistance process, and close to 50 acequias have applied for that. And many of us who live here have felt the agony of the slow wheels of the government moving, but they're moving, and we don't know how much it's going to cost because those estimates are still being developed.
And Paula, we're going to have to stop you.
And then the Hermit's Peak Calf Canyon claims office just opened. So,
hey, Paula.
We'll have to see when all those numbers come in through the process, but we have to work through and see how much acequias are going to get. But that's what we're focusing on right now.
And we'll continue this conversation more, but we're going to have to go to another break. You're listening to the Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM. I'm Jeanette Didios. We're talking with Paula Garcia and Adrian and RC on all the efforts the state and federal government are doing for the acequias. Stay tuned.
If you've been thinking about donating that old car or truck to KUNM, this is the time to make that call and actually do it. Together, our listeners who donated vehicles paid almost 10% of KUNM's bills. That means so much to us, and it means something to you too, because that's less fundraising we need to do on air. So please, don't put it off any longer. Call 888-KUNM-CAR today. We take care of everything from towing to tax receipt. Call 888-KUNM-CAR. That's 888-586-6227.
I'm Maria Hinojosa. Next time on Latino USA. 3 years after her passing, we devote the hour to remembering the life and legacy of Lorena Borjas. She's known as the mother of the trans Latina community in Queens, New York.
Her ability to help people escape trafficking situations, I've never seen anyone like that before.
That's next time on Latino USA.
That's Latino USA, Monday mornings at 8 a.m. on KUNM.
And we're back. Welcome back to Let's Talk New Mexico on KUNM. We're talking about acequias and the challenges with maintaining and preserving these man-made streams. There's still time to call us at 505-277-5866 to share your thoughts. And I would like to move on to our last ghost, or not our last ghost. Oh, okay. Sorry about that. We have a caller from Albuquerque, Marguerite. Hi, welcome to the show.
Hi. I had a question really about small acequias, and my family owns property in the Jemez, and we were confirmed through the adjudication known as a Guzman et al. As having historic water rights to the small 2-acre land that we have fruit trees and a garden on. My question is really twofold. What resources are there in terms of maybe grants to help clear, because we don't, obviously, with three properties on this one water right, two of which are currently for sale, there's not a lot of neighbor help to clean it up. So resources to help in the yearly cleaning and keeping clear. But this, more importantly, is what sort of education is being done with realtors in the area who I have experienced that they do not inform a new buyer that, yes, they may own the land on either side of that water, but they don't own the water. And we've had some sabotage on a new buyer who said, my realtor says I own that over there. And I said, yes, but you don't own the water. So it's about the education to the realtors. And then secondly, are there any sort of small monetary resources for small acequias?
Adrian, would you like to answer that?
Well, actually, I'm going to defer to Paula, because one of the greatest resources we have for acequias is the New Mexico Acequia Association.
Sure, let's go with Paula then.
Yeah, I think Adrian probably could answer that.
All right, well, she'll kick it back to me. So, the situation that you're describing of having folks move in who don't understand the acequia history and don't understand the acequia culture is more common than I'd like to see. There are stories from all over the state where new folks move in and they fill in the ditch and cut other folks off. They think they're entitled to the water, even though they may not have a right to it, a historic use right. Maybe they create ponds. And so... you know, unfortunately, a lot of those cases, those situations end up in court. But fortunately, New Mexico law is very strong on the side of acequias, and it's explicit in the law that, you know, you cannot interfere with acequias. You can't cut folks off if they have a historic right. Acequias running through properties have a recognized easement through those lands. In terms of resources for just getting help, you know, with your annual ditch cleaning, that is a little trickier. You know, I don't know of any specific grants for just, you know, sort of helping out with the annual maintenance. But there are grants available through NRCS, Farm Service Agency, to assist with other issues like land maintenance. There's a new Healthy Soils Initiative here in New Mexico, which I think a lot of acequias are taking advantage of, that provides funding to improve soil conditions, which also improves water retention. So there are some resources out there, but yeah, on a lot of acequias, as folks age out, as the young folks aren't so excited about the spending the day with a shovel, we see it's harder and harder to get the neighbors out to participate in La Limpia. And so oftentimes you do have to come up with some financial resources and just hire some hired hands to do the work for you.
And something interesting that we've mentioned on in the film as well is that many people might not know that, you know, there's water rights and then there's land rights. They're two separate entities, right?
That's right. That's right. Yeah. And so, as Paula mentioned, you know, water is seen as a private property right in New Mexico. It can be bought and sold. It can be moved. And for a lot of people, that's sort of antithetical to the acequia way of life, because, you know, when you work along an acequia, when you participate and take the water, it connects you to your land. It is what ties you to your land and brings life to your land. So the notion of separating land and water is very difficult for some people to wrestle with.
Yeah, I can imagine. Well, let's go and bring our last guest in this hour, Don Bustos, who's been farming since he was a young boy on the land. His family has farmed on for over 400 years. He's the owner of Santa Cruz Farm and Greenhouses. Good morning, Don.
Good morning. Thank you.
So your family's been in New Mexico for several of hundreds of years. How are acequias tied to your culture?
So how are the acequias tied to our culture? You know, we are, we're not, I don't know if tied's the right word. It's a living organism. So how are we integrated to the larger living organism? Because we're all part of this huge kind of a system and organism, and we all feed into each other to make each other healthy. So as part of the system, we're just part of the living organism that functions together. So if the acequias are taken away and there's no water, there's no food, then we cease to exist. So to me, it's a lot more complex and it's a lot more intricate than just part of a system. I think Paula was kind of touching on it a little bit. It's a lot deeper than just a commodity. It's a lot deeper than just being part of something else. It's just being something of the whole. We're part of the whole and everything functions together.
And you mentioned that it's a living organism. What does farming mean to you? How does acequias play a role in that?
Well, like this morning, I'll give you an example of how it happened. So this morning I got up early. Before the sun got up, I got ready and I went to the river to get the water. So you get to walk along the river. You get to see the life. You get to see the sun come up. So it starts to be part of your life. You be part of the spiritual landscape of what there is. So it's not about using a system. It's being part of the system. So I walked up to the river this morning. I got to see the beautiful river. I opened up the head gates. The water comes down the acequia and life starts to move. Life is being born again on the acequias themselves. So the water moves on, all the wildlife starts to move, the plants get fed. So you take that in as an individual, and that's in the community, so you become part of that spiritual being of the land and the water itself. So it starts to make you feel more healthy, alive. It makes your mental and emotional be more stable because you know you're secure. You feel really secure in your being. You know exactly what's going to be happening the rest of the day, and everything goes right, that'll be happening for the rest of the summer and then for years to follow. So it's really a sense of being, a sense of place, a sense of gratitude. It's hard to explain unless you actually walk it and experience it. It's easy to write about it, and I read books and films, until you experience the Asekia and you become part of it and embrace it, it's a whole different life.
And RC, would you like to add to that?
Sure. I think that just listening to Don and Don Bustos and Paula Garcia, who were born basically, you know, next to an Asekia, and they are, you know, they are some of the voices that are very prominent in the film. I mean, Don is featured highly in the film, and just listening to him, it just reminds me of what I was thinking when I was putting the film together, is that, you know, these are the voices that need to be heard. These are sort of like the Horton hears a who, you know, we are here, we are here, we are here, and they need to be heard. And I hope I was able to bring them, you know, Paula, Don, Miguel Santisteban, they're all very vocal, and they have so many wonderful ideas of how we in New Mexico can create, you know, a food system, because, you know, I've always gravitated towards small farmers who, in terms of my stories and films and things that I've produced for PBS in the past and hope to in the future, is because their work is so hard and so difficult. I mean, Don let me spend a lot of time on his farm, which is just amazing. The blackberries that he grows, the produce that he grows is just amazing. And he is, as I mentioned in the film, was a visionary who helped bring a pavilion to the Santa Fe Farmers Market. And then, of course, you know, Paula is the, you know, the executive director of the New Mexico Asekia Association, and she's everywhere. She is the voice, and I've been to several conferences with her where we're sitting together having lunch, and she hasn't prepared anything for her talk. I'm like, are you ready? And she's like, yeah. And she gets up there, and she gives the most moving, you know, talks that, you know. So we're all very lucky, you know, that we have these voices, and we have Adrian in the film, and we have, let's see, Alejandro Lopez, and so many people in the film, and that's what I wanted to make, you know, make sure people understood, that we have all of these wonderful voices in the film that we're very lucky to have here in New Mexico. And again, I just, before we run out of time, I wanted to say the film will air, will screen at the Guild April 4th, 5th, and 6th at 8:15. And then also the NHCC on April 15th, I'm just going to go ahead and there's going to have a film symposium where I'm going to talk about the making of this, you know, sort of an oral history of how this film all came together. And then on April 22nd, Valle del Oro Wildlife Refuge will also make the film part of their Earth Day activities. But I just wanted to chime in and just like sing their praises, because I'm just so honored that they're even on the program with us today, Paula and Donna and Don.
Yeah, and I'm sure these are very important dates for our listeners. I'm sure they're interested in seeing this screening, and we'll actually have this information on our website soon after this show. Mm-hmm. But I did want to get back to Don, and I just wanted to know, what is it like to be a farmer in New Mexico? What are the biggest challenges do you face?
So before I get into that, I want to just go real quick. I want to thank RC for the film. It really speaks to what I believe is, and what a good friend of mine told me is, speak the truth to power. Mm-hmm. And I think that film really does that. And it puts the power back into the people that really use the water, and it impacts them daily. So I really wanted to thank you for that, RC, and the great work in the film itself. So I encourage everybody to watch it.
Thank you, Don.
The question, what was the question? I forgot.
No, you're totally fine. The question is, what is it like to be a farmer right now? What are the biggest challenges you face?
So I don't think there's any challenges. I think there's huge opportunities for us to really be able to become more sustainable now and into the future. And there are challenges, but there's always been challenges within agriculture, within governments, and within regulations. Some of the challenges I feel that are occurring right now is the climate crisis that we're in right now and the government's inability to address them in a timely and correct manner. The other thing I feel that is New Mexico is kind of sticking its head in the sand. And this isn't a critique, and I guess it is, because I feel like New Mexico's not quite on top of its water management. I feel that it should be better at it. It should really understand the limits of its natural resource and be able to adapt to it without taking away traditional people's way of life and allowing them to be food secure across New Mexico. The last thing we need in New Mexico is to become food insecure and dependent on other people to feed us. I think in traditional, in our communities, we've never allowed that to happen, or we would not like that to happen. We want to have a free and secure food system that feeds myself, our kids, and our grandkids into future generations. And a lot of other things that go around it. The acequias are strong. I participate every year in our acequia cleaning. This year, people say there's not enough young kids participating. The next generation in there is there. There's 50-year-olds, 40s, 30s, and 20-year-olds that are just waiting and chomping at the bits to become farmers or to learn more about our agriculture and our history.
And it looks like we have a caller from Laguna, Jay. Hi, good morning. What would you like to share this morning?
Hi, good morning, everyone. This is a really terrific discussion, and as the hour is kind of drawn to a close, actually, I would like to put all the comments of your previous guests, Paula, Don, and the words they use of bringing all these voices together. When the Pueblo communities have contributed to the agrarian society that preceded the Spanish coming into this area by at least a millennia, that has always been the culture. And Don said it very well in that it's really the essence, a sense of place that contributes to why these civilizations not only existed before the coming of the Spanish, but even today it's very resilient. And Don said it best when he said being foods secure. Unfortunately, in an environment such as where we live, that hasn't always been guaranteed. We can certainly look at many civilizations throughout the Southwest that preceded the Pueblo people, and then certainly there'll maybe be other societies and civilizations that will precede us as long as we have water. The unfortunate thing is that no one can own it. We can think we own it. The Spanish thought they did it, and Paula said it great with using the term the repartimiento, simply because it was a concept that we can now tell you what land to own and what water to own. We can't own the sky. We can't own the air. We can't own the water. It's simply an illusion to even consider that. But when we work as a community, which really has been the Pueblo culture of being a community for the existence of everyone, it's really an illusion to assume we can own water. So bringing it all together as your program begins to end, it's wonderful to have this discussion, but unfortunately you didn't include Pueblo narratives, so that's what I'm adding now. So thank you for this discussion. It's really helpful, especially for those of us who call.
Thank you again, Jay. I really appreciate this. I completely agree. We should have had more of a Native American perspective, but unfortunately we reached the end of the hour. Thanks to everyone who called in and tweeted to us. A big thank you to our guests, R.C. Chapa, Adrian Oxleby, Paula Garcia, and Don Bustos. Let's keep this conversation going on Twitter with the hashtag Let's Talk New Mexico. We're also on Facebook at KUNM.radio. If you missed part of the show, you can stream it online or subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. We'll also have the show audio posted to KUM.org shortly, along with the list of resources that were mentioned throughout the show. Thank you to our engineer Marina Spencer, Megan Kamrick, who handled the phones today, Taylor Vasquez live tweeted for us, and Kaveh Mohead. I'm Jeanette Didios for Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM.